previously on 24.
Mr. Burnett, you were a traitor and a terrorist. Where's the target?
Where's the target?
Take Mr. Bauer away. He's under arrest.
Have you learned anything else about the attack?
Renee Walker followed a lead on her own. Got a visual on a heavily armed commando unit led by Juma himself.
Bill Buchanan.
Renee Walker says the target is the White House.
Condition red, secure the president.
There's no safe path out. We need to secure her in the first floor lockdown.
Hostage rescue teams are moving into place. They'll be prepared to storm the building as soon as the order's given.
Mr. Vice President, terrorists are in control of the White House.
Until you can provide me with more intel on what's going on in there,
you are instructed to refrain from launching any action.
President Taylor is locked in the safe room.
What is it I can do for you?
I need you to find me another way in.
Well, I'm looking at the White House manifest, and according to this, Olivia Taylor is presently in the building with you. Now, you'll find Olivia Taylor, and you'll get the president to open that door.
President Taylor.
God, no.
If you don't open the door, I'm going to cut out your daughter's eyes one by one.
Open the door.
President.
No, open the door. Open the door!
I can't!
Do you have children, Jack?
I have a daughter.
Could you do what you're asking me to do? Just stand by and watch her butchered?
No, ma'am. But I am not the President of the United States.
Well, I am the President. And I am ordering you to open that door. All right, General. You've got me now. There's no reason to hold anyone else. Let them go.
The following takes place between 8 p.m.
Hi, I'm Sean Callery, the composer of the show 24.
Hi, I'm James Morrison, the Bill Buchanan of 24.
And I'm Brad Turner. I directed this episode. I talked about this in 12. This is how the scene, the set manifests itself for the vice president. In 12, you'd notice we did just the corner wall in the background. This is where he was in 12, but we just didn't know when we wrote it what this room was. So that's how it expanded and became more, a little more interesting.
I think I actually scored this episode before the White House break-in episode. I think I actually scored this out of sequence. It was one of the first times I ever did that. So
yeah,
I,
when we produced the 12 and 13, a lot of our people were in Africa doing the Redemption, 24 Redemption. So we were actually shooting this with kind of a second unit crew, and it was a pretty big undertaking.
How does that affect your work when you do it out of sequence like that, Sean?
You know, it was the first time I didn't really know the story. I actually had to really watch the recap and really pay attention to it for the first time. But honestly, I had to ask a little bit and read back a couple of scripts just to find out how we got there. You know, I had no clue about the pending demise of your character, and I got to say, honestly, it was really... There's only a few moments, about four or five times during the season, I make an audible noise when I'm looking at the show. Because I can be a fan of the show exactly once when I watch right. The picture cut.
Well, you just spoiled it for me because I didn't read it or see it, and now I know.
You don't know what happened?
No.
We can assume that our fans have watched this episode already and now are listening to us. So
they're going to be bummed. Right. They're going to be
big
bummed.
Time.
There's going to be a lot of blogging about it.
Yep.
You know, were you on season 3? You started in season
no,
3, right?
Season
or two?
4.
Season 4.
Halfway
gosh,
through,
wow.
Yeah.
I think the way it was set up, the way it was written, was beautiful. When Jack exited the safe room in 12, he has a plan. We know right away at the beginning of this episode he has the plan. And when he's briefing Buchanan, it feels like exposition. And that's what's brilliant about the way this manifests itself, mm-hmm. is that although you can see James playing it, it's not obvious. And I was explaining to somebody today that it's interesting when Jack Bauer is going to basically sacrifice himself for the mission, how we resolve this. And in this case, it was, you know, pretty dramatic. But the audience knows intellectually that Jack Bauer is not going to commit suicide on the show.
Right.
And it's interesting when it's set up because you're looking at all a room trying to figure out what he's going to do. And I said this before on 12. The greatest thing about this show is when he gets himself in these situations and you just know he's got a plan. Mm-hmm. What is it?
And the line that I was walking there and with your help was to not... I mean, there were several different ways we could have reacted to that. And you know, of course, you don't want to... It needs to be formulated as the moments tick away rather than, you know, immediately hearing that and going, oh, okay, now what I'm going to do. It needs to, you know, reveal itself to me as Bill.
This was a moment where I really had to make not give it away, you know, because so many times people die, and I really wanted to try to paint it like he was really going to let him go.
Yes.
And
you did a great job because that is so important for the president.
Right.
The thing she did, she's doing the right thing. And also supplies, you know, the dark edge to this character that Tony played.
Mm-hmm. Same thing to everyone here. Study with your daughter.
You know what I've always loved about what you do is it's, you know, there are certain tones that speak to the different chakras in the body.
Huh.
Different rhythms, different percussive tones.
Yeah.
And you know just the right ones. I don't know. It sounds like it's intuitive, but which ones are the heart tones and which ones are the throat tones, which ones are the head tones.
I very much appreciate that because, honestly, what I try to do is get a almost under-the-skin kind of feeling, like when you're feeling anxious or when you're feeling mournful, like, you know, when we had to score, you know, Jack contemplating your life, boy, I'll tell you, that was I do think physiologically about the score. I think in terms of physiology and stuff, and I never quite heard it said that way. I really appreciate that.
I think we all do in our little, I know you do, you have to. You have to get out of your head at a certain point to see what, you know.
Well, the best thing we can do for Sean is to supply him with characterizations that, you know, inform him of those moments. Mm-hmm. And I really believe you need somebody special to score your show, but you also need something special on film to inspire them. And I'm hoping that that we all do our jobs to make sure, because I know that Sean's work is over the top. It's so good. It's so good. But there's something, James, that you've done and Kiefer's done and everybody that supplied, hopefully, inspiration
absolutely.
To Sean to make it.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, you know, and one thing about these episodes, like that guy, I don't know what his name was.
Jeffrey Norrie.
But he was great, too. You know, like, you know, the episode has a lot of support. You know, sometimes we have episodes where, I mean, they're all good episodes, but some really stand out more than others based on how the B stories work out. And this was just so well done. And the lighting and the look of that White House, I have to say, honestly, I mean, you really, this is the first time I'm seeing it color corrected and not grainy. And boy, I'll tell you, it's like I'm looking at it for the first time.
Well, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to be out of CTU where it was just that ice blue, you know,
exactly.
Like green, you know, like you hadn't seen the sun in about 6 years.
That's my studio, actually. So
this is the scene where Buchanan informs Jack that there's been a phone call and there's something else going on here. And Jack, he supplies the information to Jack. And this is...
Oh, dear.
Makes the moment.
Oh, that's... Oh, man. That hurts.
Agent Moss, device has been...
Oh, I never saw that flash before. That's cool. That's a CGI flash, right?
Yeah.
Explosion?
Yes, sir. The president's internet feed has gone dark.
We saw that. What's happening?
I don't know, sir, but we're going in under my authority. Let's go.
That is not your decision.
Just sends shivers down my back, because everybody is inherently aware of what's happening.
Is that video live? The screenshot. That was really.
And this is exactly what Jack had planned, but the last thing in the world he thought would happen would he be losing one of his best friends.
Brad, can I make a request in season 8 that I be able to hold a gun and just get blown away in the first 10 seconds or so?
Sure.
This is such a blast when I see this stuff.
It's not always cracked up to be, buddy.
Say what?
It's not always cracked up to be.
That's for sure. You'd be bored to tears.
I know. Well, I was in one episode in season 2 in a rock band. But
you know, I was thinking about how from the moment you join the show, you know, the joke is that you're going to die any minute. And you're the only guy who didn't joke about it, and you're the one who ended up killing me.
But I was honored to. because I fought and fought for it to be dignified. I think it really is. I fought that it wasn't going to be melodramatic. It's going to be matter of fact and heroic, and it was all of those
things. It was that, yeah. And by the way, you lasted 3 seasons, which is pretty good life.
Four. The great thing about it was that they made it speak to the scene that we have in the previous episode
exactly.
where he's in jail and he asked me to torture the guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't do that. So and then it turns out to have been a mistake, but it was a moral issue. And
exactly.
So was the death.
And by the way,
this is a great scene.
Some of the biggest production values we had this year was the aftermath of your death.
Yeah.
As you can see, it was unbelievable.
You mean as soon as I died, the production values of the show got good?
No, I'm talking about inclusive of your death.
We have the president. The president is secure.
You know, James Buchanan triggered the event that Jack needed, so he spends a lot of screen time resolving this situation and emotionally has to wait for this.
Now, here's something that people don't know, but Jack lost a friend in Redemption. And this was a whisper of that theme. It was a bit of how he.
That's a good point. That's what I meant when I asked you about the recurring theme of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully scored. It's gorgeous.
Yep.
Thank you. Silent clocks, James. You have to be proud of that.
Yeah. That's big.
That's big. It is big.
Well, I guess I'm not even going to be in the sequel.
Well, there's a prequel.
You know that for sure.
Well, that'd be cool to do a prequel in season 8. You know?
When I'm 25 years old, I'll have to get all buff and
Bill Buchanan.
Yeah.
This aftermath stuff, Cherry was so good. It reminds me of And I love her, and that she wants to stay.
I hope so. She does.
Look
at the mood. The mood that you created, though, Brad, is really, really nice. It's almost, it's really ethereal and.
Exactly.
It's too early to tell. Like you're floating to heaven with Bill.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I'd like to speak to the vice president.
I wanted the feeling that the White House was at the lowest. We're going to be in the lowest point it's ever been.
Depleted.
And then we had to bring it back to life.
Yeah, it's really.
The emergency lighting, the smoke in every room, the wounded being treated. Of course, our guy Glenn being treated in the background.
How's Agent Pierce?
They said he's going to be okay.
And of course, the score supplying the mood perfectly.
Oh, I love this scene too. You know, this is really a perfect episode. It really is. So many moments.
I'm not sure.
Huge transition for this relationship too.
Yep. Mending.
Yes, because it was all about resistance, and now.
So scared.
But it's just purely simple. It's a simplistic portrayal of it, and that's always the beauty of it. There's so much riding on it that the simpler it can be, the better.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I noticed, and it's happened a few times, even if it's been a red herring, when you think someone's dead, or there's always a scene where people reflect this way about an aftermath of the event.
Yes.
It's very, very well done.
Putting the past behind us. Of course I meant it.
Yeah.
I don't ever want
to. Interesting to be a fan of the people's work that you work with while you're in something. You maintain a distance while you're in it. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
You can have an opinion that's heartfelt while you're actually collaborating.
Exactly.
Nice strings.
Yeah, I can't prove this, but the crew is such... There's such a great crew. We've always had a great crew.
Yes.
And the synergy of that crew, just for me, shows up in the final product. You just... You know, when you're on a show that's... arduous and difficult, it still can be a great show, but we have so much wind in our sails.
That's true.
You know, particularly, here's another great, see, this is another great moment here.
The president's safe, Jack. She's in the residence, she's secure. I'm so sorry, Jack. You know that he was your friend.
Supposed to be me.
That's a big key moment. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be me.
I was supposed to set off the explosion so that he could secure the president.
That's the hero element.
The guy protecting his country.
Yeah.
No phones ringing, no backgrounds, just a beautiful...
Yes.
This isn't over yet. Agent Moss?
This is the hero that you said you couldn't be, right here.
Right,
in that
right.
scene you were talking about in 12. In the scene in 12, I did a commentary in 12, and I mentioned that that scene was very important to the upcoming episode, and that's what he's spending his whole time thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Was this man did what that was supposed to be, everything was supposed to be about me. He died a hero. And Jack hopes that one day he can die a hero.
What's great about that scene in 12 is it wasn't an overly highlighted harbinger of anything. It was just a great subliminal moment.
Foreshadowing.
And that was a great scene for you too, by the way. I mean, I just love those scenes with you and Kiefer. They were just tremendous.
When he's in jail.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah, you gave your gun up. You come in and he says, "You got to do this. You got to get that guy to talk." Yeah. And you said, "I can't do that. I can't be you."
Yeah, and you know,
and you are him here.
And there was an ambiguity to that scene too. You couldn't really tell why I couldn't do that. It could have been a moral resistance. It could have been simply a pragmatic thing. I'm not trying to do this. It could have been many things.
Yes.
And I love that about it.
But the second time you stopped.
Well, yeah, we did that several
any
ways.
Of those things.
I'm not.
It wasn't any of those things. It was very personal.
Yeah.
The first time you said, "I can't do that," I agree with you.
How many, if I may ask, how many takes, like, you know, because I see what it became, but did it become different with each take? And, I mean,
It did, yeah. Brad had a great take on it. I had a take on it, a very personal one. Kiefer had a take on it from another... perspective, and we all collaborated, and there were several different ways you could have gone in the editing room. And the thing about the charging the door too, for the explosion, actually you cut out that first guy that I took out, which is the one that blew my shoulder out.
How did he?
Oh, because I had to take that guy out from behind, and he had a what's that bulletproof stuff?
Oh, Kelvin.
Yeah. 6'8" guy or something, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And they did. It didn't work. It needed to be faster, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about that too in editing, and it was, because I like the idea of having the resistance, but it was just a matter of the real time working.
Yeah, yeah.
That you to get in there because I didn't want anybody shooting you.
Right.
I wanted you to do it all on your own. That was very important to me.
Yeah. That's
really what. But what the purpose of that was you put the gun in the air and nobody had got a shot off
right.
at you.
Well, it couldn't be. It had to be fast to maintain
exactly.
the element of surprise too.
Exactly.
So the audience would be caught mid breath and gasp and I mean, it does take you by surprise.
Yes.
It's so fast. Yeah. Good. Well done.
Yeah. Well, good on you. You guys.
So what do we got?
Were there for me.
And here's where I started witnessing the John Voight character really. Getting his hurricane status, you know, badass. I mean, he really, I don't know what it was. He just sort of morphed into, I mean, it evolved. The character evolves, and he started getting more gravitas, it seems, from this episode.
Yes.
When did he make his first appearance? I know
12.
In 12?
It was 12,
episode
yeah.
before
yeah.
this. When Juma makes his call from the White House, mm-hmm. we reveal him in this office.
Well, you see, my theory is that the true evil people in the world take on the energy of the good who die. And they become more powerful. So of course,
are we watching you now? Is that
yeah, he's channeling Buchanan, the energy of the
even though he never met him or knows him, but yeah, that's true.
Anytime anybody good dies, characters like and of course John Voight is such an exceptional actor that he can.
Yeah,
he doesn't even know what he's doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's true.
It was weird when the writer's strike happened. We had done 5 or 6 shows, and it just was such a debilitating thing. So we went out to the desert. We went to this hot springs place. I'm like, oh, God, I just got to get my mind off. And who's sitting in the jacuzzi but the chief of staff, Ethan?
No kidding.
Yeah, with his wife. So I go up
fantastic.
To him. I go up to him. I said, I know we're trying to get away from our troubles of the writer's strike, but I actually just wrote a scene for you about a week ago. And he's a very, I forgot his name. The actor plays the chief of staff. He's a tremendously nice man. It'll come to me before the end of the...
Bob.
Bob.
Bob Gunton.
Bob, yeah.
Bob,
he was,
yeah.
He was great.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
This is Bob here.
Speaking of Bob.
There he is.
Jack Bauer back to FBI.
Yes, sir. He's going to be debriefed.
I just can't imagine him in his jacuzzi, but that's just me.
He was, and he was tanned, and, you know,
that's nice,
he was relaxed as all good.
Juma may have been working with someone on the outside, and that there may be an ongoing threat.
You know, I used to joke, I have joked in the past, I think we were being interviewed by Larry King once, and I joked that there was a subliminal message under the music.
Yeah? What did you say?
I just said something. There's got to be, because it keeps us, it's another character.
Yeah.
In the thing that everyone has grown to love and be manipulated by on a level that they're not aware of until they go, oh my God, I think the music is making me. You know.
I
think it's true that there is something there. You know, as we talked about earlier, you're actually in tune with something so intrinsic and in relating something that we're not expressing or deepening what we are expressing. That's a subliminal sort of.
Yeah.
Effect, isn't
well, I hope what I'm catching a little bit of is, like, in the scenes, particularly the one-on-one scenes, like when you and Jack were sitting negotiating who was going to go sacrifice themselves.
Right.
I actually took acting classes years ago because I wanted to study how scenes were created.
Oh, that's interesting.
To have
probably
arcing,
a great idea.
You know, because you know, the work that goes on, you know, the communication, the things that aren't spoken, is so fascinating to me. You know, with the context. Sometimes it's a single word that's propelling.
Right.
Or a single emotion or energy, you know, whatever that may be. And I don't know what it's going to be. And as you said, that's why I was fascinated about, like, when you three people, you and Kiefer and you, have a view about a scene, you know, what's going to prevail and what's that undercurrent of energy underneath the scene?
Right.
I mean, I don't try to overthink it, but I hope I ride the wave of some of that work, because you guys do so much of the, if you will, excavating.
Right.
And I hope, if anything, all I'm doing is just honoring it. If it ever gets out too much in front, the moment's over. It's over, you know. And
you know, sometimes that synergy, that energy is really all that comes through in a scene too. I mean, if nothing else, there you can see that there have been that people are at work here, and there's something between them.
Yeah,
it's a pretty interesting collaboration that reads deeper than it really is, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's another scene, you know, between two great actors, you know, just, you know, the scene could have been a dead fish, you know, just in terms of dialogue going back and forth, but there's a magic in there. I don't know how you.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how you get that out of the.
Well, a lot of what's unique to this show than other shows is that, remember, we shoot this over like an 8-month period, and it's real time on the screen.
Yeah.
So one of the great things about acting in this show is that you are, when you play the moment, you are playing the moment, and you're probably pretty in touch with what just happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're pretty in touch with what happened 2 hours ago and pretty in touch with what happened 3 hours ago. So it's a great acting exercise for directors and actors, because it's not often you get that. Usually it's a cut to a scene 3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've kind of forgotten what was happening in the moment. And in this show, you know, he's just had that call about that important phone call about Olivia, and he's got that conflict going on. And he's got to be careful because she had just been taken hostage 45 minutes ago. And I kept reminding her, because she in this scene, she was, when we first rehearsed it, she was easier on Bob.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? And that moment
that's
right there,
moment.
I remember talking to Cherry about it, and I said, you got to bark at him.
Yeah.
And you're not barking at him for any other reason than what just happened to you.
Right, right.
And that was excess it, because it was only 45 minutes to an hour ago.
Do you?
And it didn't happen to him. He wasn't there.
Right.
So that's why you unload on him. And she totally got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because it's right there. It's like, mm-hmm.
Do you sort of design the production day schedule as linear as possible so that people can benefit from?
Yes, we do. Yeah. But what happens is it normally lines up with the A and B plot. You know, you'll have the Washington stuff. Well, like, it's impossible to do both. But I actually instruct my ADs to do that as closely as possible. And all of Kiefer's stuff usually follows suit with that, for sure. And what suffers, unfortunately, sometimes is the Washington stuff, and depending on the schedule and logistics. But I know that we try to do that, and we are successful on this show because we have such a big production schedule, because we shoot two episodes together. So
right.
We're actually more likely to do that.
I like these, you know, I know there's a lot of helicopter liftoffs, but they're fun because, you know, they get a moment, you know, there's nothing, you can't film a helicopter taking off and not be a little excited about it.
Exactly.
I don't know why. Maybe it's just being a kid or something.
There's two things that are very unique to our show and more than other television shows. Helicopters and cell phones, because of the real-time nature. Helicopters are the only way you can get across any city in a fast amount of time. And we have a lot more.
I've seen Jack do some terrible things today.
These are great new characters this year. These two people just...
Yeah, she's really wonderful. You know, I was thinking, Brad, what you said about talking about the real-time aspect. And from an acting standpoint, it comes... It always reminds me of when you are working or on or being taught Shakespeare, because Shakespeare's characters think their thoughts. There's hardly any subtext. It's all spoken, and except for a few characters and storylines where you're actually talking about the past, most of the characters in this thing are right in the moment. I'm going to tell you how there's no subtext. It's all about what's happening right now. Even the exposition that you're recapping is all about making the person know that you're talking to know what's going on.
For a very good reason.
You're right.
You know, Sean, most of these, logistically, this is our dummy helicopter for most of these.
Really?
And all I do is get 14 grips on the tail of the helicopter and I push it down and the front thing's about, and then
really?
We cut to this shot. In this case, we had a real one and we took Jack off but we're in the poor man's process now, obviously.
Yeah.
I remember one we did last year where you had to fly up. Jack and I were in it in the helicopter. When they blew the oil rig.
The oil rig, yes.
We had to fly up, and the whole door was gone, and I couldn't be belted in.
Right. Yeah.
I had to sort of hang out the door. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Fun.
Oh, was that on the beach? Was that the beach one at the end?
No, we landed on the derrick and jumped out.
That was the end of season 6.
Yeah. When I suddenly remembered I could fly.
Yes. Yeah, you were a good pilot, by the way.
Peter Pan.
I'd been practicing at home on my Microsoft,
flight simulator.
Can we say that on the... My flight simulator. In fact, I should have put that on. Yeah, I've been practicing my flight simulator. I'm ready.
We've narrowed the list down to 12 targets along the eastern seaboard. They're all within 300 kilometers of the base.
How many people?
10 to 15,000 in each.
And now the transition, the baton's being held, now been tossed over to who the real bad guys are. And it's really interesting because... Since the prequel, we've thought that this regime in Africa has been driving all of this thing. And we really found out that the real evil is right in our midst, working for the government with sensitive information. And it's a great transition, because when you think about episode 13, you've just gone over the middle of the season, and you were taken in a totally different direction until... You met White's character.
I always find it's kind of a vulnerable moment for the show because, you know, when we reveal the next path, you know, it requires great, in my opinion, you know, just precision. One thing that's really unique about the season, unlike any other season, is that we did the prequel after we completed 8 shows or something like this. And then we went to the Africa storyline. And then I could... So we fleshed out all this Africa music, you know. And there was a part of me that wished I could... revisit 2, 3, and 4 just to sort of thematically, you know, remarry some of the narrative. I was able to sort of bring it back for 6 and 7 because we had to open up those episodes for conforming. But there was the fact that we had a history before the first episode was really quite a gift.
Yes.
You know, interesting too, and I remember when I read this, I thought, first my reaction was, why am I dying so early in the episode? Because, you know, you want to go out at the end and have people weep while they're getting ready for bed or whatever.
Yeah.
But the structure of it is perfect because it makes them vulnerable, makes the audience vulnerable then to whatever change happens. It helps make that transition of power.
Exactly.
Just like it does if you in the structure of a play where you throw a laugh at them and then they're ready to be hit with the hammer of emotion, you know.
And I think the scene after, you know, the fact that we were able to have a scene afterwards instead of you just ending the episode, you know, to visit the following episode with Jack sitting on the ground with Morning Your Loss. It'd be a much harder. It's so much better, in my opinion, dramatically to be able to musically do that right in the heels.
It's a stepping stone to the next event.
Exactly. Yeah. It's classic. It's really classic 24.
Yeah.
We don't follow the cliches. We don't follow the rules. We find a way. You know, you've got to watch this show from the opening titles to the end credits, every episode, if you want to take in every dramatic moment. Nothing's predictable about this show.
When I first came to the show, I was trying to get an idea of what the gestalt of the place was, you know, and I asked Asar, you know, a simple question. If you can give me one thought to think about, what would that be? And he said, it's soap on crack.
And I went, well, interesting.
Okay. And I said, oh, okay, I can do that.
Again, this really, really simple little scene here with, you know, again, displaying a very evil man creating a diversion so that he can do what he needs to do to kill an informant. And it's just, because, you know, you've met this character enough to really feel for him. And it just supplies, you know, such evil to this guy.
Yeah. For a minute there, I thought that was Peter Boyle. My God, he came back.
We couldn't get him. apparently, you know.
Yeah, he's fate. Unavailable.
For a minute, I thought it was me after the explosion. I went, no, I don't remember shooting that. Or looking quite that old, but maybe I do.
Yeah, this was really, you know, you're absolutely right, man. This episode really had to connect so many things.
Yes.
We had to conclude the first villain. We had to say goodbye to a beloved character and then immediately, seamlessly go into this next chapter.
I know, and it's a burden, for the writers. They're always successful, but it's a burden because the real-time nature of the show really, really informs that structure, and you have to be loyal to it or you get burned.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice. Brad, is there any way you could tell me what happens in the next 11 episodes? Because I'm not going to be watching the show from this point on.
Why? Because you're dead?
I'm dead. There's nothing for me to see.
No, you're supposed to turn into the biggest fan.
Oh, okay.
Can I just throw this out there? Can Bill Buchanan have a twin? I mean, yeah, how about it? I mean,
the evil twin.
Never know. A priest of, you know, a twin who's a priest, and then he has to join Jack. And I mean, come on, a missionary. Come on, man.
Let's pitch that.
Well, you started to, and then I pulled you up for the commentary. You're up at the smoking room starting, I know. That's my mistake.
I was pitching my comeback.
And for the uninitiated, the smoke room is the epicenter of the stage.
Right.
It's the cigar room for the writers.
Everybody has to know that I don't smoke anymore. So
just a little production thing for our fans here. Mm-hmm. He's climbing up into the ceiling, and this is a practical location, but when he gets up into here, it's a set that's been built on our stage.
Really?
Yeah, so he's actually in a set piece now, so it's pretty interesting. And when he goes back down into the hospital room, he goes back into a practical location.
Those are actually hard scenes for me because there's no dialogue for 2-3 minutes at a time. You have to kind of keep it sonically interesting, you know, but not too much so. I mean, you don't have too much on it because they're selling it on its own.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's interesting because, you know, we shoot so many angles of this real-time stuff, even though it's real-time, would technically take a lot longer than it does. It's skill of editing and transitions that make it work, but you get on the set and you got to undo the bag and you got to get the gun out and then you got to remove the ceiling tile and then you got to get into position. And it's interesting. The editors do a fantastic job of moving these people through, and it really feels like they're doing it in real time, but when I watch it, I realize it took at least 4 times longer than that to get there, struggling around with the, you know, various practical situations. But that's the strength of it. And it's what we hope the fans talk about, because that's the cool thing. You know, finding our little guffaws and finding our mistakes, it's part of the fun of watching our show. Because we're challenging the audience to find us out, too.
Yeah.
I'd like to head back to the residence now, if that's okay.
Yes.
Olivia.
Up.
And this wounded girl.
Yep.
Through all of this, we find out her true metal.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. These guys, Sprague and Bob, do a fantastic job here.
Yeah, this is a big
Big moment.
Big transitional moment.
One fact of the matter is, this administration has just suffered some terrible...
It reveals the history.
And we need help.
Between these two characters.
I would like you to consider coming on board as special advisor to the president.
I have to say I'm a little surprised. Or that you'd sign up on this.
Such a warm, fuzzy moment here.
Yeah.
To put the past behind her. And so am I.
I overstepped my bounds during the campaign. And I was wrong.
All good.
Yes.
Just great. Okay, and I'm moving on to the next queue, and then, oh, what?
Yeah.
It's what's happening right now, and what's been happening ever since my mother took office.
Excuse me?
Do you think any of this would have happened if my mother had a chief advisor who knew what the hell was going on?
This is, yeah, this is the soap opera on crack right here.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
That's where you thought it was going, but no.
Look at those eyes.
Yeah.
This woman gave me the chills, actually. I thought, oh...
Yeah, she Sprague did a great job making this character come to life.
Yeah, this character, not the actress. She's tremendous.
You have no right to speak to me that way. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't have the facts.
I intend to get the facts. I'm going to find out exactly who failed my mother, and I'm going to make sure that the person never is.
Two and a half hours ago, she was a quivering mess.
Right.
You know, this recovery is amazing.
He should throw her into Shawshank Prison or something.
Exactly.
So basically, she just told him to go fax himself.
Basically.
Yes. I don't like reading too far ahead because I'm dying, because I didn't know what was going to happen to this guy. And I still hold out hope that he'll make an appearance before the end of the season. Does he? Does
yep.
He does? Oh, that's good.
I did that episode.
Cool.
You lay one finger on him, it's over.
That was a good moment, too. You know, I was sorry to see Moss go, too. I think he was a great little,
Yeah. Again.
Nuisance, exactly. He was holding, but then he morphs into a big compassionate place with Jack when he gets infected. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Another part of the show this fans
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert? What?
Yeah.
Well, the show's... Oh, shoot, that's right.
No, they watched them all. They listen to the character.
No, I'm talking about me, man. I haven't seen him.
Spoiler alert. I think my favorite character arc of all time in 7 seasons was when George Mason got infected in season 2. Did you ever remember that? He got infected in episode 2, and he slowly, got sick over 14 episodes. It's a little like Kiefer, but it's much different because Kiefer is working to keep himself healthy.
Right.
Wake up.
Time to die.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You don't want to wake up when Jack Bauer's in the room.
No.
I'm going to stay asleep.
When Jack wakes you up, it's time to stay asleep.
It's funny. I now remember this very clearly because this guy's freaking out, Jack. I have no idea what Jack did to him. I know I scored this first before he worked on the produce.
Right.
I was like, what was this? I had to figure out what happened.
Exactly.
There we go. Including a friend of mine, Bill Buchanan. Hey, see? You're still here in spirit, dude. You're all is good.
Talk to a lawyer.
Talk to your agent, buddy.
So, I remember when we played back this episode, when the stabbing takes place, when they realize that I put this really groovy track in. Were you at the playback for that?
No, I
don't
think so.
I put a groovy groove in, and Manny or Howard or someone said, "Oh, dude, we need it more dramatic. We need it more grounded in orchestra and drive." It was too hip and I had to redo it.
You had to de-groove it.
I had to de-groove it. It just, sometimes when Jack's running, it's not about what's happening here and here. It's just the overall journey of running, and you just want to play right through it.
I relate to that because they asked me several times to de-groove my acting.
I thought you were really groovy, actually, Chloe.
I didn't take it all out.
this is one of those scenes where Kiefer finds a way to make this stuff work, because it's very, very difficult to make this, to give this credibility. The fact that he's paralyzed again, in real time. Yep. You know, you could say he could recover over 3 days from this yep. paralytic, whatever it is that he's getting. But, you know, you really have to find a way to find your levels and make it work.
This is really, I forgot how good this episode, I mean, this episode really is something in every single minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, I haven't spoken about Kiefer like once, but I mean, it just goes without saying, the guy just so drives.
So, he's so committed to this stuff.
I just don't have to do anything when he's on screen. Oh, hi.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving. Ugh.
And meanwhile, they're playing the loop. It's so, so good. And of course, you know, Jack Bauer has this reputation, so that's how evil this Voight character is.
He's
sending an assassin that will set something up that looks like Kiefer was trying to get the information.
This is where I got too groovy, by the way.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Not anymore. We're
driving.
Yeah.
Power, jam the electronic bolt.
You know, getting out of this room in real time while he's at the door up into a ceiling piece. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's just getting the coverage, making the boxes work. You know, it's just, you know, literally can't be done in this time, but it's just a cinematic device.
And that whole hospital is a set? The whole hospital?
The hospital is, but the ceiling isn't. The ceiling. No, the hospital's practical.
It's practical.
It's all practical.
Yeah.
The ceiling piece is all studio.
It's really
this part here. But we have a cinematic quality that borders on feature for all of our material.
Oops. Sorry about that.
And all
of remains of the day. That's the movie, The Remains of the Day.
and Jack acts like getting all this information so he can access it later to use it. He loses cell phones, and that's where the magic bag came from originally. Is that he needs all these tools of the trade, and we never know from episode to episode what he's going to need next. So he either steals it or he gets it out of that magic bag.
Mm-hmm.
And he was magic bagless for a lot of this season. So.
Yeah.
Now we're having some fun.
It's a great line.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great line.
That guy needed to be dead for him.
Yep.
He's dead. Now we're having fun.
I didn't kill Burnett. I'm being set up.
Set up?
A man released some kind of nerve agent into the rope. It immobilized me. He came through the ceiling and killed Burnett. I swear to you.
Oh, we did so many takes of this scene.
Why?
It was just a difficult scene to
really?
Do.
Really? It's so
good. It was walking and talking, and the rhythm has to be correct. And it's mostly one shot.
That's tough stuff to do.
Yes.
Every day in CTU, that's all I did, walk around talking.
Especially with me directing, I never had you stand still.
Well, yeah.
Well, there's another damn it.
Yeah. And this propels us in. And again, another near miss for Jack, and Jack goes off into the shadows. And I love that about this show.
It's really...
Good one, you guys.
That was a great one. I gotta say again, man, I truly will miss your character.
Yeah, sorry to see you go, James.
Adios.
I mean,
thank you.